Right, now I should start with a little illustration. The topic today is Christian living, entertainment and fashion. It's a very sort of practical study. And when Daniel and I first got married, well, we only got married once. When we were married, when we were newly married, you know, you sort of get to know each other and all that. And I had this hand lotion that I really liked, which a friend gave me, a dear friend. And it was from America, it was a good, you know, brand. But it was rose scented. And I like the scent, you know, it smelled like roses. But Daniel just didn't like it. And finally one day he tells me, you know, I really don't like that hand lotion you wear. Would you mind stop wearing it? So I said, okay. All right. So I don't remember what I did with it, if I gave it away or I threw it away, but I said, well, if you don't like it, that's fine. I'll stop wearing it. So why, you know, did I do that? Did I do that because, you know, I was sort of being a softie, or, well, no, it was because I loved him. I wanted to, you know, just do things that pleased him. And if that bothered him, that lotion, then I was going to stop wearing it. Similarly, he used to have this orange, what should I say, like fleece top. And I just didn't like it at all. It looked like it was a schoolboy. And plus, it had this sort of connotation in my mind, because at the time, you know, they had Guantanamo Bay, you know, sort of outfit, you know, like the orange prisoners, you know. And so, you know, I said, you know, I really don't like that, please don't wear it. So he did, you know. He said, but can I please wear it when I'm doing woodwork outside? I said, that's fine. But, you know, in a relationship, you try to do what pleases each other. And I think it's the same in our relationship with God. And that's what we're going to study about today. So, do we have Bibles here? Some Bibles. Well, for those who don't have them, let's open our Bibles and read 1 John 2, 15 to 17. All right, well, I'll read it. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away, and the lust thereof, but he that does the will of God abides forever. Alright, so it says here, love not the world. It's a bit confusing, because there's another text, which is very well known, John 3:16, which says what?
God so loved the world.
Right. So what does it mean here? Well, it says love not the world. And that if you love the world, you're not of the Father. Well, it explains it, fortunately. And verse 16, for all that is in the world, that is the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. So it's talking about worldly things. It's not about, you know, the world as in humanity. You know, God so loved the world. God so loved humanity that he gave his only begotten son. This is talking about the world and in the worldly things that are not according to God's will. So, you know, this is the kingdom of heaven and there are the kingdoms of this world which are not part of God's kingdom. So, what is the lust of the flesh? What do you think when you hear?
What your body feels like doing.
Right.
Food.
Passion. Yeah. So obviously, you know, we need to eat, you know, we need to drink, we need to wash ourselves, you know. There are certain necessities of the body, you know. You know, sex is one of the, you know, needs of humanity. But when that is taken, is that in an inappropriate way, you know, food, you know, like overeating or, you know, sex that is not appropriate or things like that, then this is what we're talking about, lust of the flesh. Okay, how about lust of the eyes? Right, it's fashion, it's display, it's you know, things that please the eye but are not necessarily good, right? So I would say, you know, if you are going to have a very flashy house, as in, you know, you will have all these decorative things that cost, you know, an arm and a leg, and, you know, you could spend that money in a more, you know, useful way. That is also the lust of the eyes. Okay, how about the pride of life? Yeah, it's
the achievements that go beyond what you kind of need or what God's plan for you, if you want to just be somebody because you don't maybe feel the worth in God.
Right. That's right. So, you know, our value should be in that we are sons and daughters of God, that we're children of God. That gives us our value. We don't need to find our value that, oh, you know, I'm, you know, the leader of a big corporation. So, you know, or you know, you can, your pride can, you can put your pride in a lot of things. You know, oh, you know, I have this, you know, successful husband or beautiful wife or talented children or, you know, academic degrees. You know, pride can come from many different sources. It's when your value is taken from something that is not in God. Okay, so we've unpacked that one. Now, we're going to talk about a few practical things here. One is entertainment and media, music. Then we're going to talk about fashion, dress, and outward sort of apparel. So let's start with entertainment. Let's read 2 Corinthians 3 verse 18. 2 Corinthians 3 verse 18.
3:18.
Yes.
And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit.
Okay, so how are we changed? What are we changed into? Right. So if we behold Christ, then we are changed into his image, right? Same way, if you behold something else for a long time, you are changed into that image. Have you ever noticed when, like, there's a husband and wife that have lived together for a long time? Maybe, you know, they've been married for 50 years or something, and, you know, sort of they're old and white haired and all, you know, wrinkly skin. And they, even though they may have been sort of quite different when they were young, when they're older, they sort of start to look like each other. Have you ever noticed that? Or they talk like each other, or, you know, they can finish each other's sentences, or so, you know, when you spend a lot of time with someone or with something, you tend to become like that thing. So whatever we spend a lot of time on, it will influence us. That is the principle. So how about entertainment? Well, I guess we were talking here about movies, advertisement that we're exposed to. Of course, advertisement, it's not like we're seeking it out necessarily, but you know, what we watch on our TVs, what we watch on our devices, we are so connected these days, right? And so what is a good principle of how we should guide our watching, our entertainment? So let's read Philippians 4, verse 7 and 8. Philippians 4, verse 7 and 8.
And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Mm-hmm. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of God, good report.
Mm-hmm.
If there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.
All right. So here is a given a standard of how we should evaluate, you know, what we should think about, what we should watch, what we should, you know, ingest into our minds. So it's saying whatsoever is honest, well, true first of all, true, honest, just, pure, lovely, what has a good report, what is virtuous and praiseworthy, you know, that's what we should think about. Now, if you think about, for example, you know, the film industry today, what sort of would not fit that criterion? What kind of...
It's very
difficult to find a movie where it's one of the Ten Commandments, for example,
or where they don't glorify sin and breaking
commandments. That's true. So that would include, you know, things that are violent. You know, that is not lovely, definitely. That's not a good report. Actually, a good guide is... Well, it used to be. If it has like a, you know, children can't watch this, then probably adults shouldn't either. Because, you know...
But these days, all the kids' movies are filled with magic and everything else. Is
yeah, I'm saying it used to be, yeah. So, you know, watching like gory, bloody things, it's not good for you. You know, first of all, it desensitizes you from suffering. You know, I remember we lived in England, and one day I'm just going onto my street where I'm living, right? There's two guys, and they're having a knife fight. I mean, they're fighting with a knife. And this guy is like stabbing this other guy. And these people are just standing around and just watching. Like, nobody's calling the police, nobody, you know. Like, what in the world? This is very strange. You know, so people, you know, when you sort of watch things all the time, you know, you see murders and crimes and, you know, bloodshed and all that, it, you know, it does something to you. It's not a good thing. So I think that would be one thing, is you know, to avoid violent, you know, entertainment. And here is... text about it. Psalm 11 verse 5. If you want to open at Psalm 11 verse 5. Okay. Who wants to read that? Psalm 11 verse 5. Right. So if you love violence, you know, if you love to watch violence, then, you know, that is not according to God's will. What other sort of things do you think would not fit the criterion of true, lovely, pure, you know, praiseworthy and all that, as far as entertainment goes?
Sexual immorality.
Right. Sorry, exactly. Actually, one good sort of test for me is, would I be comfortable watching this with Jesus? You know, if Jesus were to visit my home and he's sitting right next to me, you know, on the couch, would I say, okay, Jesus, let's just watch this film together? You know, would I actually watch with him something that, you know, contains, you know, like sexually explicit scenes or things like that? No, I don't think so. So... I think it's always hard to sort of give fast and hard rules, but I think we have to, you know, whenever we have to watch, when we watch something or listen to something, you know, put it through this sort of filter of Philippians 4 verse 6 to 7. Is it true? Is it? I think there is a small segment of the entertainment industry that can fit that. And I would say, well, there's Christian television, you know, and there's lifestyle TV, there's, you know, the Hope Channel, 3AVN, there's a lot of good things that you can watch there. But also there are certain films, especially if they're sort of biographies that are true, you know, about certain people, that, you know, can be very edifying, you know. But again, I can say that there's not many of those. You know, so I think we have to be very selective and think, you know, will this encourage me in my spiritual walk, you know, with God? All right, let's talk about music. You know, how about music? You know, there's music all around us these days. You know, you go into a shop and there's music, right? You go into an elevator and there's music. So what kind of music do you think is pleasing to God? Let's read a text that talks about the influence of music. 1 Samuel 16, verse 23. 1 Samuel, verse 16 to 23. Okay, who has it?
So it was, whenever the Spirit from God was upon Saul, that David would take a harp and play it with his hand. Then Saul would become refreshed and well, and the distressing spirit would depart from him.
Right, so this is sort of almost like a form of music therapy, isn't it? He, you know, Saul was troubled, and so he had David playing on the harp. Now, what kind of music do you think it was? Actually, it's very hard to play on a harp, you know, and play it inappropriately. You know, I've never heard a rock tune on a harp. Have you? Also, like, since I play the organ, I've thought about this a lot. It's actually very hard to play inappropriately on a pipe organ. Yeah, it's extremely hard. You know, just because the way, you know, the instrument is set up, you actually cannot play a rock tune on the pipe organ.
But there are some really weird, like, super new classical pieces, which are a bit chaotic.
Right, they don't usually use the pipe organ for that.
No.
But yes, I think
I've been through a classical, was it piano concert, where we kind of painfully sat through it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Again, you know, you have to think about Philippians 4, verse 6 and 7. You know, is it lovely? What, you know, if it's a music that sort of sounds bad to your ears, you know, or makes you all disturbed or hyper, then, you know, you know that it's not right. And you're right, you know, there can be, you know, classical, you know, especially modern music that can be very disturbing, you know, very, you know, all over the place. But there's a lot of music also today that is designed to excite the senses. So, and, you know, we could talk about this for a long time, but, and if you want more information, you know, I can direct you to some very good materials. But if you look at the origins of certain kinds of musics, they're not really, how should I say, the, you know, the spring of pure lovely water. The way, like, jazz, rock, you know, hard rock, you know, things like that, the way they came up, it's not really to glorify God and to, you know, give you peace to your heart and all that. I would challenge anyone to listen to a hard rock piece and, you know, read the Bible at the same time. It's just very hard. Because the music itself, you know, the way the music is structured is to instill in you something totally different. It's not, you know, obedience to God and holiness and, you know, wanting to please God. It's exactly the opposite. It's rebellion and, you know, violence and other things. Similarly, you know, there can be very sensuous music, you know, that, you know, it arouses in you passions that are not really appropriate. And I have a special, how should I say here, axe to grind, and that is especially when music like that comes into the church, I think it's inappropriate. Because, you know, the mixing of the holy with the unholy is especially, I think, displeasing to God. When you come to church and you want, you know, you want to hear music that is uplifting and it's bringing you closer to God, and if you mix sort of, you know, say, "My Jesus, I love you," or whatever, you know, "Near my God to you," and you have this, you know, driving rock beat and, or, you know, some really jazzy kind of thing, it's just not glorifying God. It's not bringing you closer to God.
So then people ask the question, you know, the words may be such and such, but is music neutral?
It's not neutral. Definitely not. Yes.
I can just share my own experience. I used to listen to a lot of rock music and heavy metal music, and that was my life. And I didn't think it affected me. You know, I liked it. It felt good and, you know, all of that. But I noticed, or I didn't notice myself necessarily right away, but I noticed that the more time progressed, the more calloused I actually became towards other people's feelings. And, you know, this kind of music was, I was listening to, you know, Iron Maiden and these kinds of things, and it makes you cool and hard, and, you know, this kind of thing. But it's, at least you think that. But personally, it affected my relish for Bible, but also my character, becoming more calloused and harsh in some way. And when I decided to let it go, I felt really relieved in one way, even though it was difficult to do that. To delete all that music, but
right. I had a similar experience when I was young. I used to like this particular rock band, English rock band, called Queen. some of the music, you know, it's just very well done. You know, the melodies, you know, the melody, and, you know, what was his name? Mercury. I forget the lead singer's name. Anyway, he just, yeah, it just, you know, knew how to use harmony and everything. But then, you know, you listen to some of the words and, you know, you realize that, you know, you're either with God or you're against God, you know. You have to make a choice, you know. And in the end, I remember listening to the last time, and I said, "That's it. I'm going to." Because we used to have those cassette tapes back then. You know? And my brother was into all this music, so, you know, I sort of borrowed from him, and I just gave it to him. And I said, "I don't want to ever listen to this again." So that was the end of my Queen days.
Just thinking of this text and about David playing the harp. It's interesting that when he played, this evil spirit departed from Saul. Like, we're asking the question, if music is neutral,
right?
Like, it was the music that David played actually drove away the evil spirits. Now, can it be so that a different kind of music drives away the good angels?
Yeah.
I think it can be, and in Ezekiel it says that Satan, he was a musician. He played.
The pipes were prepared within him.
Right. And also it says in Isaiah 14:11 that he was cast out together with the noise of his harps. It actually says that his music was cast out with him. So, I mean, there was something about the way he used music that affected, that God didn't appreciate, and he threw it out of heaven.
Right.
So I think that, yeah, that was not music that drove away evil spirits. That was music that drove away
right.
Good spirit. So I think it is not neutral. I think it affects us. And the question is then, where do you draw the line and all of that? And I don't think we can have a very clear example maybe here, but at least I think what you're mentioning here is really...
Right, so, you know, it can be bad words, you know. I mean, you can have bad melody, as in, or I should say lack of melody. Yeah, if there's this music and there's just no melody whatsoever, you know, like the sort of very modern weird things that you know, can, then, you know, that's not going to help your mind, you know. If it's sort of very slimy sort of sensual harmony, that's not good either. Or, you know, a sort of driving rock beat that, you know, it just doesn't stir the best in you. You know, it arouses passions in you that are not really holy, you know. If you study, like, the origins of these kind of musics that have very hard sort of rock or rock beat, you know, very hard sort of percussion, they were used in a religious context that didn't honor God. It was ancestor worship, spirit worship, and that's where the origins of many of these kind of musics comes from. Now let me say this, that doesn't mean that we should only listen to, you know, hymns all day long. There's a lot of music, and it can be very happy music, you know, that uplifts you and sort of really gives you a zest for life. And do you wanted to say something?
I was just going to say, you know, just as there's good music, Satan has the opposite. He has something that is so similar to the good music, but it still affects us. And what is the problem with that is it's so dangerous because it, over time, it lowers our interest in spiritual things. And, you know, I have also listened, of course, to this kind of music, but it was not until maybe 20 years later, all of a sudden it came to me, you know, that I looked at my music style, you know, how it changed over time from just softer music and then to harder music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think that biggest danger is, because you don't feel it right away. It can seem very innocent right at the time when you do it.
Right. And scientists say that the way music is perceived, it doesn't really go to your frontal lobe, you know, where you analyze things and you think, okay, is this music like this or that? Music affects your emotions, first of all, you know. Have you ever seen a film, a movie without music? It'll be a very boring movie, because you know, filmmakers know that you have to have music, you know, to set the mood. That's how they set the mood. You know, if you have like a scary scene coming, and you go, no, 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 you know, like, you know that.
The film called The Bible doesn't have music.
Sorry?
The film called The Bible.
Okay.
It doesn't have music.
Right. But you already know sort of by the kind of music that, you know, what's coming, you know. Or if it's like a lovely sort of violin piece, you know, that there's a romantic scene coming, right, or whatever. But, you know, music affects our emotions first of all. And we have to sort of, you know, guard what comes into our mind. Okay, we haven't talked about, like, computer, all the information that comes from a computer. I think it's needless to say, although very important to say, that pornography shouldn't be a part of a Christian's life. And unfortunately, that is a big problem today. And, you know, even children, you know, get addicted to pornography. And sad to say, even, you know, churches are affected by it. You know, it's sort of the secret vice, you know, that corrupts the soul. And why, you know, why it is so dangerous to the soul is because, you know, you live in a fantasy world where everything is possible, and so, you know, the real thing is less and less attractive, and you know, you become addictive to something that really just eats your soul. And I'm sure there are other people who can talk more eloquently on the subject, but that's definitely, I think, something that, you know, is not part of God's plan for us. Okay, let's read Romans 12, verse 1 to 2. Romans 12, 1 to 2.
I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God.
Okay. So, are we to be conformed to this world? Are we... No, it says we should not be conformed to this world. But how are we transformed?
Our mind, renewing our mind.
Renewing our mind, you know. And, you know, sometimes we have to make new habits, new, you know, new ways of thinking. And the mind, you know, it is very plastic in a way that you can make new habits, you can learn new ways of thinking, you know. If you've been addicted to a certain thing that, you know, it, you know is bad and has harmed you, you can form new habits and your mind can be renewed with the help of God. Okay, now I had one more text here before we finish off this section. And let's read Philippians 2, verse 5. Philippians 2, verse 5. Okay, who has it?
Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus.
Okay. So another criterion here is this the mind of Jesus? You know, is whatever I'm watching or listening to, is this what Christ would do? You know, is this what you know, is according to the Spirit of God? And another text, Psalm 119, verse 37. Psalm 119, verse 37.
Turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way.
Right. So we should ask God to turn away our eyes from what is bad. You know, sometimes you have to think about, you know, how you're spending your life. And, you know, there are the excellent things, and then there are the good things, and then there are the bad things. Of course, we should avoid the bad things. But there's also some okay things, sort of, that can just eat up our time and, you know. So, you know, life passes and we should think, you know, what do you want to, you know, do with your life? You know, you can spend a lot of useless time just watching the news and, you know, some boring program after boring program, you know. There are a lot of better use of our time than, you know, spending on even innocent kind of entertainment, you know. But if it robs our from our time with our family or from employing our time in a better way, then we should think about that too. Okay, now let's talk about vanity and fashion. All right, let's read 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 to 5. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 to 5. Who has it?
Your beauty should not come from outward adornments, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is a great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God, who used to adorn themselves. They submit themselves to their own.
Okay, well, that's a lot to digest there. Okay. So, where should our adorning come from? Where should, you know?
Inside.
On the inside. Okay. So, okay, if you met sort of, have you ever met somebody who was truly beautiful, like inside and out?
Yeah.
Right. What did you appreciate about that person the most? Sorry?
Inner beauty.
Inner beauty, right.
God likes it.
Right. I have met some very beautiful people. but, yeah, their beauty came from their goodness, their kindness, the love that they showed, you know, the generosity they showed to the people around them, the humbleness. You know, sometimes, you know, their intelligence, but the way they use their talents to glorify God, you know, that I found very attractive, you know, in people. Now, if that is supplemented by outer beauty, you know, that's even better, you know, if somebody who's physically beautiful. But it doesn't really work the other way around. If you have somebody who's very beautiful, but, you know, on the inside, you know, they're just like, you just don't want to be around them. Just want to watch them, look at them, but not really, you know, have to deal much with them. So, you know, the value should really come from the inside. Now, does that mean that, you know, somebody's very beautiful on the inside, but, you know, they should be dressed like a mop, you know, and sort of in long black clothes, you know, look like a bat, you know, just come through the door, or in a sort of haphazard way? No, I think, and let's read.
You want to be consistent.
Consistent. Consistently consistent. Ugly. Because I've met people like that too. And, you know, of course it's very nice to be, you know, kind and generous and all that. You also have to look put together. As in, you have to, you know, be clean and neat, right? But let's read another text here. 2 Corinthians 5 verse 20. 2 Corinthians 5 verse 20. We can, yeah. I'm interested particularly in the first part of the verse. What does it say?
Now that we are ambassadors for Christ.
Right, and then it talks about reconciliation. So what does it mean that we are ambassadors for Christ?
We have an ambassador.
We what?
We work in the embassy.
Right. Now, how do you think people that work in the embassy present themselves? Right, because they're representing their country, you know, they're going to, you know, look the best they can, right? Now, what would you say if you went to an embassy, right, and you meet the ambassador, and, you know, the ambassador has like a, you know, like a shaved head, like on both sides, and has a big, you know, thing like this, and, you know, has like a, you know, like five, you know, gold necklaces, you know, and piercing his nose. What would you say? You know, like, this is the ambassador from the United States of America, right? You think that he's lost his mind, right? Or America has just dropped on the face of the earth. There's been a nuclear disaster. Right, that would happen. Okay, so if we want to represent God, you know, the right way, then we should be mindful of the way we present ourselves, okay? And we should dress neatly and, you know, with taste. But also, what does it say here in, let's go back to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 to 5. Well, it talks about being adorned, you know, with the inner virtues. But for a bit more of the practical. Let's read 1 Timothy 2, verse 9 to 10. 1 Timothy 2, verse 9 to 10.
In like manner also, 1 Timothy 2:9. In like manner also, women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works.
Right. So, how should, and I think this doesn't apply just to women, it applies to men as well. Okay. How should women adorn themselves and men?
Modestly.
Modestly. Okay, here's one good principle. Modestly. What does it mean to be dressed modestly?
Not showy.
It's very culturally dependent, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. Because, you know, if you go to some indigenous tribe, you know, who are wearing, you know, very little, you know, they have certain standards. But we're not talking about them. We're just talking about sort of regular, you know, where we live.
Ambassadors normally dress fairly modestly.
Right.
I guess our culture says that, you know, we need to dress in a way to attract attention to ourselves, or to dress in a way that, you know, you're sexy, or you're, you know, you want to have people's attention. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is the opposite of that.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I, as a woman, I have to think, you know, the way I dress, does it attract people to me in an inappropriate way? It's just as simple as that. I have a very simple rule of thumb. Okay, and it may not be the same for everyone, so I'm just talking about myself, okay? So you can take it or leave it. But for me, you know, if I'm comfortable for a man to, you know, sort of touch me on a certain part of my body, then it's fine to show it off. If I'm not, then I better cover it. Okay. So, you know, if I have, let's say I have a little wound somewhere, or, you know, if I'm comfortable to, you know, ask, you know, David here, you know, to help me put it on, then, you know, that's fine. Just, you know, show it off, you know. But if I'd rather ask my husband to help me, then I better cover it. Because, you know, it's private, right? It's there are certain limits. Now, of course, fashion has changed over time, you know, and I think for Christians we shouldn't be, you know, the tail or the avant-garde, you know. So, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, we need to walk around with, you know, long dresses so that, you know, not a single part of our body can show, you know, you can take that to extremes.
Isn't wearing a headscarf to go too far?
Yes, Muslim women wear headscarves. If you ask them why, they point to this verse in the Quran, or I don't even know if it's in the Quran, maybe it's in the Hadith, I'm not sure, where, you know, the Prophet said that you should wear a scarf when you go down to the fish market, not to attract attention. Now, is hair sexy?
It depends on the country.
It depends on the country. Sorry?
It could be for some.
It could be for some.
Yeah.
In some countries, it is, because they are not used to see hair.
All right. Okay, so in that case, why do not men cover their hair if it's sexy?
Okay, good point.
Sorry?
Good point.
Because I think
that women are not as visually stimulated as men.
We could wear a hat. Yeah.
Right.
But if you are in such a culture where it's by law enforced, and everybody else is covered, maybe you should cover too, because in that culture it may be very immodest to show.
Right. I think we should be sensitive to, you know, to cultures like that. You know, if you go to, you know, Iran or something, I would probably put on a headscarf. I'll definitely put on a headscarf.
I think we need a training course on this. I think this is a very difficult part of the Bible instructions to live in practice.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very difficult to figure out how to dress and not to dress. And it's quite difficult.
I was in the...
Because you could argue in any way. You know, I can travel to Zimbabwe and there the rules are different.
I was in a culture where I was teaching, and it was in the islands of Pacific. And another guy working on another island, he says that on that island, the women would go bare-breasted. And even when he came to have like a parent-teacher meeting, which was only with him and the mom of one of the children, it was hard for him to focus. So yeah, it's different all over the world, but I think God will help us to give us wisdom in these specific cases.
I think, yeah, maybe you're getting into that, but in Genesis, I mean, you find Adam and Eve, they made fig leaves, right, when they were ashamed of their nakedness. And that's actually, you know, little aprons, the bikinis, or whatever you want. You know, that's what they made. And God was like, this won't work. And then what he did, it says that he made clothes out of skin to cover them. And of course, this fig leaves in and of itself doesn't work. But I think also this, there are certain general rules that, and even Paul speaks of it in 1 Corinthians, he says that, you know, there are some parts of the body that we need to cover because of the sin that came into the world. We're not dressed in the light robes that Adam and Eve had before. But there are some cultural aspects of it that we need to be sensitive to. But still, I mean, if everybody started going bare-breasted, and, you know, I don't think that's something a Christian should necessarily adapt to. Because there are certain general, universal principles, no matter what.
Right. Well, for here and now, we can just think about our culture and how, you know, how do we conduct ourselves? You know, it's not that often that, you know, we go to countries that have, you know, bare-breasted women, or, you know, where you have to cover yourself. I think, yeah, it's for men and women. It's not just for women, but, you know, when I dress a certain way, I try to think, you know, will this attract unnecessary attention? You know, am I dressing a certain way to attract people to me in a way that really they shouldn't be attracted? You know, I sometimes ask my husband, I say, you know, would, if you saw somebody else, you know, dressed like this, would that, you know, sort of draw your eye? In a way that it shouldn't, you know. And yeah, you know, I don't want to go into specifics, but there are certain ways that, you know, I think attract certain, you know, desires and lusts that are, you know, really should be between the husband and the wife. Okay, let's see what else it says in this Bible here. In this text, 1 Timothy 2 verse 9. So we talk about modest apparel. With shamefacedness, sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array. What does he talk about here?
Which verse?
1 Timothy 2, verse 9 and 10. And we are running out of time here, but it's talking about not attracting attention to yourself through elaborate hairstyles. It doesn't mean that, you know, you shouldn't braid your hair necessarily. In the Roman and Greek culture, women had, especially wealthy women, they had these elaborate hairstyles. They would have their slaves sort of spending 3 hours, you know, doing their hair every day, you know, with all sorts of, you know, gold plated in and, you know, very, very intricate. And we can see that from, you know, like coins or medallions that they find. And they can even tell, you know, this is the wife of Augustus or the wife of such and such by sort of the hairstyle, by the coiffure. And so what it's saying here is, do not be ostentatious. You know, do not try to attract, you know, show off your wealth and status, or even try to attract attention through the way you make up your hair. Simple as that. Now it's talking about gold or pearls or costly array. Well, costly array, let's talk about dress, you know.
So makeup.
Good question. Well, costly array, we shouldn't dress in an expensive way, you know, we should dress simply. Quality, you know, Jesus had, his robe was made out of, you know, one piece of cloth. So it was a simple but very well-made piece of clothing. So we should wear quality clothes, but not showing off, not expensive, extravagant. But the Christian should represent God. Gold or pearls? Well, according to this text, you know, jewelry is not, you know, it's something that, you know, the Christian should avoid wearing. And there are the texts here that we can look at. Genesis 35, verse 2 to 4. It talks about how when Jacob and his family, you know, they're going through sort of a revival, a reformation in their family. Now what they do is, you know, they take off their golden jewelry and they bury it. They just give, you know, their idols and their jewelry, they gave it to Jacob and he buries it. Similarly, let's read quickly Exodus 33, verse 3 to 6. Exodus 33, verse 3 to 6. If, you know, fashion is a particular temptation for somebody, I think it's good to dress simply. But I don't think there's, in the Bible, we find the principle that everybody should be dressed the same. But I think the principles are modesty, quality, sobriety, simplicity. Okay, but let's read this text before we go. Exodus 33, verse 3 to 6. Okay. Jonathan, do you have it?
Yeah. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people. And when the people heard this bad news, they mourned, and no one put on his ornaments. For the Lord had said to Moses, say to the children of Israel, you are a stiff-necked people. I could come up into your midst in one moment and consume you. Now therefore take off your ornaments, that I may know what to do with you. So the children of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments by Mount Horeb.
Right, so this is where they're still by the Mount of Sinai, and you know, there's sort of a searching of heart. They take off their ornaments and they okay, one last text. This is again very practical. Leviticus 19, verse 28. Leviticus 19, verse 28. And then I'll tell you a personal testimony just very quickly.
Do not cut your bodies for the dead or put tattoo marks on yourself. I am the Lord.
Right, so, you know, it says do not tattoo yourself, just as simple as that. So, I think when it comes to, you know, dressing and how we should present ourselves, it's not really, I think we can take general principle. I think we should, you know, learn from each other. But in the end, if your heart is right with God, you ask, you know, God, is this what you want me to do? It's really between you and God. I mean, it's not, we're not here to sort of judge each other, say, oh, you should do that, you know, take that off, put that on, you know, it's not like that. It's, you know, when we want to serve God and we want to please Him, we ask, God, is this what you want? You know, and He will tell us. I was struggling with something at one time. Okay, and this is a very sort of personal thing, so, you know, don't take it the wrong way. And it was between me and God, okay? I'm only telling you because it sort of fits the occasion. And I had bought this pair of sort of very tight jeans, right? And I thought, you know, everybody's wearing it, you know. I mean, everybody, I mean, all the grandmas, it doesn't matter, you know, the size, they're all wearing these very tight jeans, right? And so I thought, okay, should I wear this, should I not? And I bought it. I said, oh, come on, I don't want to, you know, be the, you know, I want to, you know, look, you know, good, right? So I take it home, you know, I put it on, I look in the mirror, yeah, it looks good, okay. And then, like, that night I just couldn't sleep. I was just like, you know, this pair of trousers I bought, you know, it's this, you know. So the next morning I said, okay, I need to decide what I'm going to do with this, okay. I said, Lord, please show me, all right? And I played very honestly. I said, Lord, please show me what I should do with this pair of trousers. Should I keep it or should I take it back, right? And within an hour and a half, I got the answer. It was so clear, and it was not a coincidence that I was, and that was one of the very clear answers that God gave me in my life, and it was, take them back. And I did. I just said them back, and I said, that's it. How did he show me? Well, first I usually when I do my housework, I put on some, TV channel. It's this Romanian TV channel. It's Christian. And there's this woman talking, and she's talking about how, you know, if we don't learn now to give up things that are pleasing to us but are not pleasing to God, how will we do later? And then she says things like inappropriate dressing and, you know, tight clothing. And I'm like, whoa, that one was for me, right? And I'm still thinking, well, I'm not sure about this, you know. And then, right, I think I got an email or something. So after I read the email, I usually check the news on BBC, and it has like the first 10, like most read. And the very first, right, piece of news is tight jeans, bad for health. And literally my jaw about dropped on the floor. I had to pick it up. So I just couldn't believe it. And there's this story of this girl from Australia, right, who was wearing these tight jeans, and then she had some thrombosis and problem with her legs. And this had happened like 3 days before, you know, the news was reported. So this was like on Sunday that the news had happened, and they reported it on Tuesday. And so the Lord gave me this thing. When I asked for it, you know, I pray, and then, you know, the God, you know, top news on BBC is tight jeans, bad for health, you know. I was very humbled, and I said, Lord, thank you. I think I got my answer here. There was no doubt. And so, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, tight jeans are bad for everyone. This was what I asked of God, and he told me, and that was good enough for me. So I think if we are sincere and honest and we want to please God, we just ask him, Lord, what is your will? And he will show us. He will show us what is pleasing to him. All right, we've gone a bit over time. I'm sorry, but let's close with a word of prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for this opportunity to study your word. I pray, Lord, that you will help us to please you in everything we do. And Lord, please take our lives and make them beautiful in your sight. In Jesus' name we pray.